From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Deconstructing PSYOPs, propaganda, and mainstream media BS. You're with Brian McClain, a.k.a. Hesher, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. We're going to be joined by Steve Kirsch in this hour. I'm very much looking forward to that. Always enjoy having Martin Seif on the show. So if you missed that on the live stream here, you're going to want to go back and check it out on the podcast version. The podcast will be up shortly after the live presentation. And yeah, this is a really interesting analysis that we're looking at here. And as Martin pointed out, it's worth a read, not a quick read, a detailed read, because you know it really goes into what we can expect moving forward. He addresses the nuclear threat, and there's another part here I want to address that Martin and I didn't get to. So I'm going to go ahead and kind of continue that thread. Number 8 on Gordon Hahn's list here. Let me read this to you. Putin is likely considering a second, more concerted offensive to take or encircle Kiev in order to force Zelensky and the Ukrainian government to flee or negotiate. Okay, so there are at least 3 reasons why this could very much be the case. First, traditional military strategy preaches targeting the capital of your enemy. For this allows one to disorganize or behead the command of the opponent's armed forces and could force a breakdown of the government or negotiations. Second, there are several proposals to evacuate Kiev given the destruction of electricity, water, and transportation systems. This may also be under consideration because the Maidan regime fears an advance on Kiev may be at the heart of Russia's upcoming winter offensive. Third, Ukrainian authorities recently conducted a search of the Russian Orthodox Church's Central Ukrainian Monastery and the ROC's First Vatican going back to Kiev's Rus. The Kiev Poroshenko Lavra suspecting the Russia-loyal institution of aiding and abetting Russia during the present war. This has 2 significances. One is that Kiev is panicking as the war appears to be about to take a nasty turn for the Maidan regime, or it may be trying to provoke Putin to advance on Kiev, hoping it will provoke a NATO intervention. A second is that this measure and any subsequent seizure of the sacred Lavra is likely to increase hardline, and not only hardline, support for Russia for a no-holds-barred winter offensive and capture of Kiev, considered the mother of all Russian cities, precisely because of ancient Kiev's cultural and religious roots in Russian history. So he goes on to say that in 2023, we will see intensified Western efforts in the former Soviet Russian periphery to include the efforts to turn Armenia and Central Asia west away from Russia, continue Western Ukrainian and Russian attacks on civilian infrastructure in and around the Russo-NATO-Ukrainian war, foment color revolution in Belarus. We've already seen a little bit of that. Try to kick off, including infiltrating Ukrainian-based and Western-trained partisan and/or divisionary groups into the country, and increased Western intelligence efforts to do the same against Russia, using Ukraine as a base, and a crisis in Moldova that could expand the war beyond Ukraine, transforming it into a regional or European-wide World War III. That is what we should all hope to avoid. And that is one of the reasons we cover this so much here, because this could turn into something very large and very, very detrimental. All right. Finally, the year 2023 will be a pivotal one for the outcome of the Democratic Party state, authorizing revolution from above. Republican majorities in the House and Senate will be followed by congressional investigations of Russiagate, January 6th, FBI and CIA politicization, the Biden family's criminal operations, and rigging the falsification of the 2020 presidential electoral process and results. This will face the Democrat Party state with a fateful decision if it hopes to complete and consolidate its authoritarian revolution from above, whether to make a great leap in order to guarantee a Democratic Party victory in the presidential and other elections in 2024. And don't forget emergency rule, arrests of Trump and other major opposition political media leaders and the like, and prepare for mass falsification of the 2024 election results, or risk leaving the executive and legislative branch to the Republicans and the arrest of many of its leaders. There's likely to be a pivotal assassination of a leading American political or media leader in 23-24 carried out by Americans, U.S., and even more so European material support for Kiev will wane somewhat and then collapse if Russia can gain a clear upper hand in the fighting that threatens the further existence of a Ukrainian state. So, well, there you go. Again, that is 12 points on the NATO-Russian-Ukrainian war. Did you know there are many ways you can listen to TNT Radio? So why not stream us direct from our website on your desktop, tablet, or mobile device, or download the app from the App Store? We even stream live on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. And you know what? We got you covered on TNT Radio.
It's the stuff.
It's that division
people are talking about.
And that cluelessness that they want to push.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The same-sex marriage bill has lawmakers concerned about religious rights. Will the Respect for Marriage Act create new ways to sue people based on their religious decisions? Well, here to discuss this is TNT News producer John Matlin. John, welcome to the show.
I'm back, Hesher the Great. So yes, here we go. The Respect for Marriage Act is leaving many lawmakers wondering what types of lawsuits will now find standing when it comes to the religion aspect of the bill. Representative Chip Roy, a Republican from Texas, offered an amendment to protect and strengthen the religious protections offered in the Respect for Marriage Act, and it has been struck down and blocked. The bill passed through the Senate in bipartisan fashion, however. House Democrat and House Rules Committee Chairman James McGovern refused to allow the amendment to hit the floor. His explanation is that Democrats want to pass this during the lame duck session before Republicans take back the majority. The fear he brings forward is the amendment kicks it back to the Senate, and if that happens, he states, quote, "For all intents and purposes, it's dead for a year," end quote. The push to codify the same-sex marriage has occurred after the June ruling in Hobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization, where the idea of reconsidering issues was brought up. The Senate bill currently has language that seems to protect religious liberty pertaining to nonprofit religious organizations that will not have to provide services to marriages it opposes. However, the conservative viewpoint is the protections are limited. We live in a day of absolutes and piss-poor governance, so Representative McGovern said, quote, "You can bring one amendment after another to reverse the last 70 years of social progress," end quote, but then went on to finish by saying, "We will oppose you on that." The take here that I have is, once things pass in the political climate that we currently live in, they don't give anything back on either side, so any added religious protections are unlikely to be seen anytime soon. Hesher, what's your take?
This sounds, it reminds me of kind of the, what's gone on with the medical system. You know, they've been working for the last almost a decade now to remove medical exemptions or religious exemptions when it comes to injections, vaccines, you know, things like this, those kind of requirements to go to school or to go do a job, whatever. So, you know, I see these things happen. It's like they're just legislating their way into all the tyrannies in which we're already experiencing. So this, and I have not looked deeply into this bill, but from what I have heard and from what you told me today here, well, it looks like this is going to be basically, this is legalese and globalese and lawfare to protect a lot of the strange new practices, strange new postmodern practices that we have in the West these days. So I'm not surprised to see this whatsoever. And of course, they're going to do a great job at making the bill seem to have the kind of language that would protect some religious institutions, but they're pretty open about saying that they're going to fight them on those. So yeah, I don't know what to say about this one, John. I don't think it's going to protect. I don't think it's really going to protect anybody except for the system, the left, and those that want to take litigious action against religious communities or religious people or people, you know, not wanting to do something or wanting to do something because of their religious beliefs. Like we've seen the rainbow cake thing happen over and over again. And actually, I believe the Supreme Court just came down on the side of religious freedom with regards to cake mandates. So I don't know, maybe is this all about cakes, or is this all about giving people the opportunity to troll and sue religious institutions? I'm really, really not sure where this all heads. Maybe the Satanic Temple is in on this one. Are they in on the bill writing here?
I always say this, that it's always absolutism. There is no tolerance at all. And it's all a facade when they're like, we preach tolerance, because the tolerance here would have been an obvious approach to this amendment, or it should have. There was even an amendment, an additional amendment floating around in the Senate when it was passed, and it even allegedly had bipartisan support, but it failed to be included. And when you talk about tolerance, this is more about forcing something upon the other. So when religion was trying to force things upon people, it was pushed back on. Now the politicians and the politicians and this whole new wave of the left wants to push gay marriage onto people and not leave any room for their take. The middle ground would be, it's recognized. If it's against your religion, you don't have to do anything with it. Just the same way, if a gay person doesn't like somebody that practices religion, they don't have to do anything. But this is the libertarian to me, is which we're trying to all allow each other to do what we want and not step on each other's liberty. But every time the politicians touch this, there's always the element of you're gonna take this, you're gonna like it, you're gonna do as you're told. And they don't want the amendments because they know that it will take decades likely to pass these amendments, or it'll have to go all the way to Supreme Court to be debated. And it's just, we're in this never-ending circle of stupidity. We're like that hamster on a wheel that thinks we're getting somewhere, but we're not. And everybody's just saying these keywords that trigger people and elicit emotions. And it's always tolerance. And they're the most intolerant people when it comes to something that they don't agree with.
Yeah. You know, they, that used to be one of the, you know, when I was, a bit younger, one of the things that would draw people, if I recall, to the, I don't even want to say the Democrat Party. I just want to say more of like the general liberal mindset, was exactly what you just mentioned. Tolerance and open-mindedness. There was this viewpoint, I don't know how true it was. There was this viewpoint that conservatives, religious people on the right were intolerant and hateful of people that live their lives differently. And there may have been a time when that was an argument to be had, you know, as the pendulum kind of, you know, goes from right to left. But we're now in a pit and the pendulum situation where the conservatives, or maybe, you know, I won't even partisan this. I'll just say the public is laying on the table, watching that bladed pendulum move from right to left. And every time it does, it drops down a couple inches and it gets closer and closer to us.
Sure it does.
You know, that's freedom sitting there on the table. That's liberty sitting there on the table. That's voter integrity. That's tolerance. That's all that stuff. And while the right and the left, you know, argue about whose version is more correct, they just keep dropping that pendulum a little bit closer, you know, as it gets. And now we're at the point where it's just millimeters away from the gut of freedom and looking at taking its first slice.
Yeah. And, you know, we mentioned this briefly yesterday. We were talking about the different protests with children and the drag queens and all that, and how that somehow became this LGBTQ hill to die on. And there's so many in that community that don't even understand what this fight is. They don't want anything to do with it. They think it's disgusting that there's these drag queens doing these story hours. And that's kind of what we're saying here, is that this is going to have in the public, and not in the what the media is showing, in the general public, a lot of people are like, all right, whatever, gay people get married, we don't care, whatever. And but then they're told like, hey, but this is not where it ends. It's also, it doesn't matter if you walk into a Catholic church, they're going to be like, hey, you have to marry us next. And then the church will be like, that's totally against our religion and stuff like that. And then when you look at how that's going to become court cases, or if there is some sort of loophole or bad wording in the law, you there is a slope where this doesn't turn out where it's just like somebody has gained the right. It becomes somebody has gained the right to take someone else's right away. That's where these things get hairy. And then, of course, they just go, we'll ram it through. We don't have to fix it. Good luck on our 70 years of progress. We're going to fight you every inch of the way. When people take power, they never give it back.
That is very well said, my friend. That is exactly the situation we are in. And, you know, it occurs to me, this whole concept of just like, oh, we'll just bash these things through, never mind the fact that it's openly unconstitutional. It'll get to the Supreme Court someday. And in the meantime, we'll just run roughshod over it, and roughshod over the media, and roughshod over the public. And we'll just browbeat everybody into our, you know, the main narrative on this, and anything else will be considered, any discussion or questioning will be considered, you know, racist, sexist, homophobic, et cetera, et cetera. But then it hits the Supreme Court someday, 1, 2, 3, 4 years down the road, just like the gay cake. What do you know? The Constitution wins out. So at what point does that stop happening? That's what I'm concerned about, John.
Yeah. And this goes also to vaccine mandates. It's the same exact thing. You say, oh, I have a religious exemption, and you're not allowed to go into a restaurant in New York City last winter, and probably again at some point this winter, knowing them and their tyranny. And you have to ask yourself, all the left is going, of course you're not allowed to. No one cares about your religious rights. It's about me. And then it goes the same thing when it goes to everything else, like gay marriage. It's no one cares about your religious rights. Make that cake. And it's kind of like, why would you want to support a business that doesn't want to make you the cake? Like, there's so many different right. levels in this about where you can enforce your will. And a lot of it, if you ask me, is a bunch of BS. And I want to put it in a paper bag, set it on fire, and throw it at somebody.
yeah, absolutely. Leave it on their porch.
That's it.
With another gift inside of it. Yeah,
oh, man.
Absolutely, John. All right. Well, we'll keep up this fight, man. We'll keep it up. And folks, gosh, think about that. If it's unconstitutional, why are we going to waste our time with it? Because it's nothing but that, a waste of time. By the time it finally hits the Supreme Court, how much time and money has been wasted between then and now? How many people's rights have been trampled on? All that good stuff. Okay, John, I got to let you go, man.
Yep, I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, there he goes. John Matlin, everybody. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Steve Kirsch.
You should hear what Jason Allborn is talking about.
Anthony Fauci has addressed the COVID origin cover-up, but where he takes it will make your blood boil. During the infancy of the COVID-19 pandemic, then President Donald Trump and his administration were concerned that a lab leak might have occurred at China's Wuhan Institute of Virology, and that, whatever the case may have been, Beijing wasn't being upfront or forthcoming with either the US or the WHO about the virus's origins. At the time, Dr. Anthony Fauci, effectively the USA's COVID czar, poo-pooed both of these notions. Of course you would. As the Trump administration put pressure on China to start delivering the facts, Fauci sat in the background, content to tell us how many masks and face shields we ought to be wearing, and whether we could ever get back to shaking hands again. He also endorsed lockdowns, which he was suggested too as a good idea because China had used them in the past, and wholeheartedly Klaus Schwab, Earth's unofficial CEO, has also said that China has a lot to offer humanity. No setup here whatsoever. 2.5 years later, Fauci, on his way out the door now on the world's longest exit interview, is telling us whatever he wants to, and he's saying, lo and behold, he now admits that the lab leak hypothesis might have happened. And whatever the case may have been, Beijing was stonewalling the United States and the WHO about the virus's origins. Guess who Fauci said was responsible? Yep, Donald Trump.
Jason Olborn and Jason Q. Citizen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Don't think you're the one losing your mind.
And I don't know how many commercials you'll see. 3 out of 5 have mixed race couples in them. That's not by accident. They're selling soap, man.
We can't believe it, but we cover it.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, everybody. My guest is the inventor of the optical mouse and one of the first internet search engines, InfoSeek. He's the founder of the COVID-19 Early Treatment Fund team, comprised of experts from a wide range of fields, including medicine, technology, philanthropy, and business. It is the world's leading fund focused on early treatments for COVID-19, using leverage, repurposed drugs, and more important to me personally is his Substack. He's got a really great Substack. He is all over the things that are most important as we move into the third year of the COVIDian cult reality that we are faced with here. Pseudo reality is a pseudo reality because we're not able to talk about it. That is a big part of the problem. Let me read you something from a recent Substack here. I'm not content sitting around doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. It's time for new, aggressive, in-your-face tactics that will force the pro-narrative side either to debate us or face public ridicule for refusing to be held accountable for their decisions. I've got Steve Kirsch with me. Steve, welcome back to the show, and thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Brian. It's good to be here again.
It's great to have you. Now, let's talk about this a little bit, because this is the one of the most near and dear things to my heart when it comes to what we've experienced over the last few years and what we're looking at moving forward if these people continue the trajectory that they've set up here. Wrestling that narrative away from these people is paramount, is absolutely paramount to me. I'm not even sure if this was the top thing on your list today to talk about, but I saw that on your Substack, and for me, it was like, I got to talk to Steve about this because this is really speaking to what drives me. I want that narrative taken away from these people, or even better yet, I would like them to be able to debate people like you and the people that you have on your team set up for this initiative, because the best way that they can prove to us that their stuff is right is to open the discussion, and that's what they refuse to do. So talk to me a little bit about that, and also tell me about the is there any update on the Israeli safety data? Has anybody taken your offer yet to have that discussion? No. Or look at that data?
Yeah, no, of course not. You know, it's one of the things, you know, why can't we talk about it? Why can't we talk about why the chair of the ACIP committee, which is the outside committee for the CDC, doesn't want to look at the Israeli safety data that shows the vaccines are not safe. Now, what kind of safety, what kind of person who's responsible for the safety of the world wouldn't want to see the safety data from the Israeli Ministry of Health that they have collected over the past 6 months? Because they only started collecting the safety data a year into the vaccination program. So they basically had a very poor system for monitoring safety effects in the first year. And then they finally decided that they needed to do something serious. So they involved experts. The experts came back a few months later saying, hey, we got a serious problem here. And then 6 months later, they had another interim report and they said, yeah, it's still a problem. You got a major problem here. You have legal, you're going to be in legal trouble here for saying one thing when you knew that these vaccines are unsafe. And they basically buried the report. But there was a video leaked of the scientists telling the Israeli Ministry of Health what they found. And nobody in the United States wants to see that video, except for the Epic Times. You know, isn't that amazing, Brian? Yeah, nobody wants to see the safety data collected by the Israeli Ministry of Health. And I have asked people like Martin Kulldorff, former, he's on leave from Harvard as a professor there. Infectious disease expert. He's been on FDA committees. And I asked him, Martin, why wouldn't anyone want to see the safety data? And he said, I don't know. But you can't find out because I tried to find out whether Grace Lee wanted to see the safety data. She called the cops on me. And the cops said I did nothing wrong. That everything I did was legal. I was free to go. There's no... I didn't do anything wrong.
Harassing or trespassing.
Yeah, I'm not harassing, not doing anything wrong. And they said, done nothing wrong here. You know, she shouldn't have called the cops on you. There's no crime here. You know, you don't call the cops.
Did you get to give the printout to the cops?
Crime being committed. But you see, that was her way of weaseling out of answering the question, because otherwise she'd be forced to answer the question yes or no as to whether she wanted to see the safety data. So she said, I'm not going to answer that question. I'm going to call the cops on you instead. Ha ha. Right. So this is the way that it just shows you the lengths that people will go to avoid answering a simple yes or no question. And to this day, she has not answered the question. But by her actions, she has answered the question. She's answered the question, do you want to see the Israeli safety data? The answer is no. I don't want to see the safety data. Now, anybody who doesn't want to see the safety data from the Israeli Ministry of Health should be fired. And that's not happening. You know, so we have a system which is completely out of control. She should be fired for saying, I don't want to see the Israeli safety data. That is inexcusable.
Oh, it's completely egregious. I mean, this is a series of products that they have done their best to put into every human being they could possibly get. 1, 2, 3, or 4 needles into. And they're telling us that they don't want to look at the safety data. It's just ridiculous. And to make things even worse, in some states now, I'll pick on California for a moment here. I had Dr. Katibi on the show last week talking about this. This bill 2098, AB 2098, I'm sure you've probably heard of that. They really, really don't want us to talk about it, especially in California, where they're trying out the concept of making it illegal for a doctor to give their opinion outside of the mainstream opinion on COVID shots and other vaccines, to the point where they're threatening to charge them and have their licenses suspended or be fined and drag them through court for years over mis- and disinformation on COVID shots and the like. And even they're even concerned that these agencies might stitch them up by sending walk-ins looking to entrap them. You know, I asked Dr. Katibi that. I said, are you guys concerned that this is going to end up sort of like alcohol or cigarettes, and some agency will be sending people in there to ask you a loaded question and see if they can get an actual opinion out of you? And if they say anything outside of the, you know, approved propaganda on COVID vaccines, then they could be, you know, lose their license. I mean, doctors, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. You know, there must be something in the medical research that shows that you need a law to silence doctors in order to have better medical outcomes. I mean, there must have been a randomized trial where they randomly chose people and looked at the patient outcomes from doctors who didn't follow the narrative. But I haven't seen that study. So, of course, all of this, these laws are based on there's no science behind any of this. There's no, this isn't about better patient outcomes. This is about control of the narrative. This is about, hey, let's make sure that nobody figures out that we injected people. We forced people to get injections. We don't want to be held accountable. I mean, this is like cover up. But, a lot of people are just completely fooled by this, right? A lot of people in the legislature just think that, hey, vaccine is a good thing, and anybody who talks badly about the vaccine must be a bad person. And so that's what's driving this, is this belief that the authorities are correct and that anyone who opposes the authorities are wrong and bad people and should be punished and should have their license taken away. The gag order only applies to statements made between doctor and patient. So you're not allowed to tell the patient anything other than what the narrative is, but you can go on Twitter and broadcast to the world that you think the vaccine is deadly and that no patient should take it. But when you talk to your patient, you have to tell them, take the vaccine. It's safe and effective. Otherwise, you will have your license taken away and you will not be able to practice medicine for the rest of your life.
Yeah, and have to go through a legal battle that could take years and years and tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, this is a punitive measure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't even imagine how that would feel to go through everything that someone has to go through, you know? I mean, we're talking multiple degrees, residency, that whole, climb the ladder of all that stuff. I mean, I've got friends who've been nurse practitioners, doctors and stuff like that. And the amount of sacrifice, work and money and time that they put into that to go into a field where they can help people to then get treated that way in California, I think is just absolute madness. I mean, it is a sign of a society in decline when we treat our doctors that way. And it's dangerous, Steve. It occurs to me that it is antithetical to the scientific method, and that Dr. Katibi was telling me, we go to conferences and we talk, we'll go to a conference on, pick a thing, diabetes, whatever, and we'll sit around and we'll talk about our opinions and our different methodologies for treating, certain patients. And we learn from each other, we challenge each other, we try to repeat each other's successes, we look at each other's failures. And much of what diagnosis is opinion based. Obviously there's a lot of things that are cut and dry, you can test for whatever, but they're basically telling doctors that, this whole doctor-patient confidentiality thing is not something you can even think about anymore, because, there could be someone walking in your office looking to stitch you up for this. And that your opinion doesn't matter anymore. You can, you can say it on Twitter or whatever, but if you say the wrong thing to your patient, everything you've worked for is going to be taken away.
Yep. Yeah, this is, it's a new way to practice medicine. I'll tell you. The other thing that's really incriminating is the medical community is not up in arms about this. Like, every doctor should be up in arms about this.
Yeah.
This is medicine by consensus.
Yes.
This is not about individualized medicine anymore. This is about you treat the patient the way we tell you to treat the patient. And if you don't, we will eliminate you. I mean, it's basically, it creates a sheep mentality. And I just came from New Zealand, and we had the the experience of actually herding sheep with our vehicle. So it's interesting. They all move together. They all follow each other. It's
amazing.
You know, it was a very firsthand experience in seeing sheep mentality. And the doctor mentality is the same way. It's like toe the line, follow what we tell you to do, or else you're out. I mean, that is not the way medicine should be practiced. And the medical community should be ashamed of themselves for not raising their voices against this bill.
Yeah, because if enough of them did, these punitive measures would all fall flat. They would not be able to prosecute or demonize or deplatform or deperson all of them. You know, they can only do so many. I mean, look at what they've did. They tried to convince the world, and I think this is really sick. They tried to convince the world that there are only a dozen doctors who are out there putting out quote unquote disinformation on COVID, as though like we can just because these are the ones that, you know, were featured in Plandemic or the ones that were on Joe Rogan or the ones that have the best description of their side of what the science or the narrative, whatever people prefer, they're the only ones. Like, oh, there was a dozen crazy doctors out there, you know, but it's hundreds of thousands, I'm assuming. It's so many that know that they could lose their practice, lose everything if they speak up. And then there's the whole systemic thing with all the money coming in for every positive test, every ventilator, like every little piece of the thing brings in money. So it just makes me wonder, is it all about money? Is it all about self-censorship for self-preservation? Or is there another motivation? I mean, I'm sure it's a tapestry of motivations here and external factors that they're dealing with. But I mean, at the point where we're talking about AB 2098 being passed in California and Gavin Newsom threatening to run for president and saying that he wants to use California as the model for the United States moving forward if he were to be president, that's pretty freaky. That's pretty scary right there, because they are completely destroying so much of what we understand the whole do no harm medical system based on the scientific method actually is.
It is a little scary, and hopefully people will wake up soon, and Gavin Newsom will realize that Gavin Newsom is a complete disaster on these issues.
Yeah, absolutely. So So with regards to the narrative, what's the approach here? Because your blog post really got me excited. So you're talking about a new approach to resolving our differences, basically. So how do we get to the civil discussion that you and I have been hoping for to grow and blossom?
Well, that, you know, that's something that I'm going to brainstorm with media experts as to the best way to accomplish that. And it could be local, it could be national, it could be that, you know, I live in Santa Clara County. We could put ads in the San Jose Mercury News saying, hey, you know, why won't Sarah Cody talk about it? You know, and essentially take this this idea for a campaign is, you know, why can't we talk about it? And it means lots of things. It is basically anything that has to do with the COVID-19 response. And that means vaccines, masking, mandates, you know, the whole nine yards, early treatment. You know, we can't talk about any of this stuff. We can't have an open discussion on anything related to the COVID-19 pandemic response. Isn't that amazing? Nothing COVID-19. I mean, it is like a third rail. Can't have a discussion. You can't challenge me on that. Can't challenge Yale. Like, you know, Yale requires students to take the bivalent booster, but faculty members are not required to. Now, how does that work? I mean, what's the science there? It shows that faculty members aren't a risk, but students are. I mean, I missed that. I must have missed the science. And they're saying nothing. And it's, I know at Stanford, I talked to faculty members and they talk to, you know, they ask questions like, why do we have this policy? And they don't get an answer either. It's really stunning. The silence on anyone on the pro side is stunning. And when I came up with this idea for this campaign, you know, about, you know, why can't we talk about this? I reached out to about was a list of 28 people, and within minutes, over half of them said yes. You know, and I've been trying for close to 2 years now, trying to get a debate with people from the other side, and I don't even get a response. You know, so we're looking at minutes versus like never on the other side. It's quite stunning the difference here. Like, we're not afraid to come to the table and talk about it, but everybody on the other side is. I can't find anyone in the world to talk to. I mean, I talked to one government official in Trinidad Tobago, and this is on like a radio show. And then when things got a little hot for him, they cut me off. The radio show basically dumped me out of the Zoom chat room, which was used for the audio. They kicked me out deliberately. And they didn't let one of the other speakers, Paul Alexander, into the show either. So, and they thought I was going to be the guy that they could push around easy. So they didn't let Paul in, they let me in, thinking they could easily handle me. And then they discovered that, oh, that was a mistake. And so they kicked me out of the room and pretended like, oh, he dropped from the call. Too bad. You know,
wow.
So that's what happens. You never really get a fair discussion between any of these people on any of the issues. And there are hundreds of issues that need to be talked about, and they're avoiding discussing every single one of them.
Yeah, that's not the first time I've heard of somebody getting kicked out of a Zoom call for wrong think on COVIDian topics. This is happening pretty much often. It's happening often. And I saw that happen with Trump too. It's amazing. Like, there's this itchy trigger finger on people, like, oh, people who are in the mainstream narrative and they see you questioning it. It's like, oh, that can't be said. You know, that can't be said on my Zoom call. Even like family Zoom calls and work Zoom calls and high school reunion Zoom calls. Like, we've experienced a lot of that over here, seen that happen. You know, like, you say the wrong comment about masking kids in school or whatever, and next thing you know, you've been muted or dropped from a family Zoom call. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous that it has spread into our society this way. Hold the line here, Steve. I got to take a quick station break with TNT, but we will be right back with Steve Kirsch on TNT.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Even if there was sanity in the energy policies, we would find Europe in dire shape looking at the upcoming weather. I don't know. What, are we going to just shut down all the industry here for the month of December, looking at what is about to happen? Are we going to tell people to just pile into one room and try to heat that one room? The week, December 14th through 20th, across Europe, specifically the UK, France, Germany, Poland, on into Scandinavia, may be one of the coldest December weeks relative to averages in the last 100 years. Now, that is usually caused when large areas of high pressure over Scandinavia stick their nose into the Western European weather business, and that's what is going to happen. And that means a lot of light winds, and light winds don't do well with wind turbines. We'll keep you updated on this. This is climate and weather watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi for TNT, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
And Imagine being invisible. You could mess with someone's mind, sneak up on them, and they wouldn't know you're there. Even scare them to death. When you speed on our roads, that's what happens, because no one sees you coming. Think Road Safety, a message from the Government of South Australia.
The vaccine was not brought in for COVID. COVID was brought in for the vaccine. Stop the jab and save lives.
The COVID vaccine does not work.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm with Steve Kirsch here. Check him out on Substack. That's Steve Kirsch, KIRSCH.substack.com. I highly recommend you go on over there and subscribe. And please upgrade to paid, because that will help Steve and his colleagues with their new approach here. I like that you're working a new approach. The big questions are, and if this all goes to plan, you might start seeing ads like this in newspaper, radio, TV, online, billboards. I love the billboard idea. Why can't we talk about it? Why does nobody want to talk about it? Why is it forbidden to talk about it? Why are physicians threatened with loss of their jobs if they talk about it? Why is it taboo to talk about it? These are the questions, and we live in a society that is supposed to be one of free speech. So why? The big question is why? And Steve, I also noticed on there you were writing about your recent return from New Zealand, and let me read this part. I'm writing this from Auckland Airport in New Zealand, awaiting my flight back to San Francisco. I was just informed that my attempt to have a discussion about COVID policies with Michael Laws on the platform was denied. The message I received read as follows, quote, "He isn't interested in having his views tested by yours," end quote. I mean, that says it all. I can't believe they sent you that. That is just like a giant, like, take a knee and admit to you that he has a belief, a set of beliefs, whether they are like his own or ones that he must follow, that he cannot have tested by yours. He's not interested in it, but obviously cannot. I mean, that's pretty crazy that's the comment they sent you.
Yeah, it's honest. Or rare, right? Honesty.
Yes.
You know, but you know, right. Usually you'll get a, oh, hey, sorry, we couldn't fit you in. We had a really tight schedule, and you know, maybe some other time or what have you. But then, of course, it would be like, okay, when? So
shall I wait?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's like when I was on Fox News, they said, well, we can't verify that what you just said about the 500,000 deaths. I said, you know, basically responded to them and said, well, you can't or you won't. And the answer is, either they can't, because I think they have an agreement with their advertisers that they can't speak badly about the vaccine. And so any guest who speaks badly about the vaccine doesn't come on again. You know, it's why Wayne Root is kind of banned from Fox. Because Wayne was telling the truth about the vaccine. So Fox basically, and he was on Fox all the time. And now he's persona non grata because he spoke the truth about the vaccine. This is why, of course, people are you know, looking at that saying, well, I don't want that to happen to me. So they behave accordingly. You know,
how powerful is that?
Oh, it's very powerful. I mean, you know, I wrote this Substack about a message from Michael. And Michael was a guy who died November 1st of 2021. So more than a year ago. And he said before he died, he said, look, the nurses want everyone to know that they're not being allowed to speak out, and the vaccines are dangerous. And this was his message to people. But of course, you know, that was buried by the, you know, it wasn't even covered by any of the mainstream media. And here, let me see if I can pull it up real quick. So, what he wrote in his last words were, many nurses and non-nursing staff begged me and my wife to get the truth out to the public about the COVID vaccines, because the truth of deaths from the vaccine was being hidden within the medical profession. I promised I would get the message out. Now, how many people know that? Like, you know, nobody. You know, unless you read my Substack.
Right. No, and there's stories like, there's so many like this. You know, back in 21, I had a family on talking about how they lost their father. His name was John, and they lost him 2 weeks after he took the Johnson & Johnson shot. And it was a really interesting case study because John's doctor agreed, you know, John's doctor actually had the, I guess this was early enough on in all of this that, you know, at that point he said, yeah, I think this could have been due to the shot. He was not incredibly healthy, but he certainly wasn't on death's door. I believe he was around 54 years old, something like that. And his family and his doctor agreed that was what happened to him. And he suffered a massive stroke, you know, like a huge stroke, something way bigger than someone his age should have had. He didn't have any, you know, there was no indication that he was about to have anything like that. It happened suddenly. And now we have these, I have a place I'm tracking in my Discord. Some of my colleagues are helping me track this, like Ruckus. The daily died suddenly. I mean, it's like, If they talked about that every day, if they conglomerated that on the media just for a week, these shots would be done.
Yeah, but they keep everything hidden, so nobody finds out, right? People die. You never know about their vaccine status, right? And cause of death. Well, it's a private matter, and not disclosed, and the family doesn't want to talk about it. And please respect their privacy.
Yet they want to know your vaccine status to go in and get a freaking sub sandwich in New York. Like, you have to tell them that at that point. But then if you die suddenly, nobody wants to, it's a non-issue, non-topic. I've found that I have to, oftentimes when some of these cases happen, like with especially people, prominent people that are, you know, sports ball players or musicians or whatever, I have to go back to their Twitter and I have to scroll all the way back to 2021. And then I can find out, you know, their vax status, because most people like to wear it on their sleeve, forgive the pun, when they first started coming out. And now it's gotten a little bit more quiet.
Yeah. And they typically don't tell you when they get a booster. You know, like we had to find out the hard way, do a lot of digging to find out that Doug Brignoli was vaccinated a week before he died. And he was the guy who said, hey, I'll be the test case. If I die, then the people who are saying the vax is bad were right. He died. He died like a week after he got the vaccine. And he said, I will be the test case. He sacrificed his life to send a message to America that the vaccines are unsafe. And it didn't make a difference. Sad. Yeah.
And America
sacrificed his life to send a message, and nobody's listening.
Amazing. And they would listen. The problem is there's no voice unless they're here at TNT, unless they're on your Substack, unless they're following the people that you're working with. And, you know, there just is no voice. And it's so sick. It's almost so incomprehensible to people to think that the entirety of the mass media cartel, the entirety of our politicians, and every doctor and nurse that they know will tell you, don't worry about it. This is all a normal reaction, or a proper novel reaction to a novel virus. You know, they'll tell you that kind of thing. But no one, you know, and that's why they keep calling everybody conspiracy theorists and tinfoil hat wearing blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, once you start down that rabbit hole, you can't unsee this stuff. And I think, do you think there's a general skepticism and hesitancy that is growing amongst the public as more and more people find you and find TNT and you know, all the other people that have been doing such great work on this to great personal detriment to themselves in many cases, you know, their reputations and whatnot. Do you think it's, are we on a trajectory where we could get past this? I'll leave you with that question. You got 1 minute.
Yeah, we are. More and more people are realizing that the vaccines are not safe. Over 10 million people have seen The Died Suddenly, a movie. And while there are technical criticisms of some of the scenes there, where they took some liberties in terms of reusing footage, the points made by the film with respect to the embalmers are on very solid grounds. There's no way to challenge that. Nobody, you know, Dr. Ryan Cole invited all of these fact checkers to come visit him in his lab and actually take a look at these clots and examine them. And I'm sure the embalmers will be happy to have any of these fact checkers accompany them and prove that they're wrong. But you see, none of them want to do that. They all want to do it based on oh well, it looks like a blood clot, so all the embalmers are mistaken. And even if you've been doing this for 40 years, and there are hundreds of embalmers saying that these are unusual, all the embalmers are wrong, because I'm a medical doctor and I haven't seen any of the clots firsthand, but I can tell you that they look like regular blood clots, and so therefore all you're seeing is regular blood clots, and this is just a hoax. And what do the embalmers have to gain by doing this? Like, this is just gonna hurt their business. It makes no sense.
I gotta let you go. We're at the top of the hour, Steve. That's great though. Thank you for taking us there, and thank you for everything you do. I'll look forward to your next appearance. Thank you so much.